Just a reminder that the Missing Witches podcast is entirely listener-funded. If you love the project and want to support us and join in on conversations like this one live, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/missingwitches.
You aren't being a proper woman, therefore you must be a witch. You must be a witch.
Welcome once again to the Missing Witches Coven, where we speak to beautiful witches that we've found. Today, we are honored to have, I think that this is quite a distinction, the Four Timers Club. I think it's you. I'm talking to granddaughter right now. I'm terrible.
I love it.
And remembering that you're all out there sometimes. So granddaughter Crow is here holding the distinction of the Four Timers Club. I think you, White Feather, and Phoenix Inanna are the only members of a very small club. So thank you so much for coming and spending time with us, granddaughter Crow. You listeners might also know her as Dr. Joy Gray, or as the GDC, as I prefer to
Absolutely.
She's got a new book out. She's got so many projects that we're going to talk about. But first, GDC, I want to invite you to open this circle and this space between our ears.
Absolutely. So awesome. Ya'at'e, they call me Granddaughter Crow. I am honored to be in this sacred space, in this sacred time with each of you. Just want to cast a circle around this space, around this time, declaring this space a sacred space, and this time is a very sacred time. I'm going to remove my own personal ego out of the way so I can be a clear conduit for each of you to be able to take a jewel away, or maybe a bunch of jewels away, that we may come together authentically as individuals, but collectively and united in spiritual sacred space.
Thank you so much, Granddaughter Crow. Like I said, it's always amazing to be in circle with you. I want to dive right into your newest, maybe not newest, because it does take a while between when you finish writing a book and when people get to get their hands on it. So one of your more recent projects, the foreword opens like this. I love this. And this it was such a great way to start a book. The foreword opens with this. As a youth, Granddaughter Crow tells us that she was taught not to question. Thank God she didn't listen. Can you talk about your new book and how
Absolutely.
That is the perfect intro for this book?
Oh, absolutely. So the new book, it was released on June 8th, so it should be available to everyone at this time. If you want to find it easily, you can always go to granddaughtercrow.com, and I have a whole page on all my books and the links to like Barnes and Noble or Amazon or, you know, wherever you get your book. But this one is called Belief, Being, and Beyond. And then the subtitle is Your Journey to Questioning Ideas, Deconstructing Concepts, and Healing from Harmful Belief Systems. This is a book that has been, it's really actually, you know, my first book I wrote, The Journey of the Soul, The Path of a Medicine Person. And in that one, I talk about how we earn the medicine, the wisdom that we carry. And we earn this wisdom through life's initiations, the hard times we gain and grow, you know, with that. And a little bit more shamanistic. The second book that I wrote was Wisdom of the Natural World. Spiritual and Practical Teachings from Plants, Animals, and Mother Earth. That's a really wonderful book. And to toot my own horn, at this point, as we're recording, I am up for an award for that book. And I'm going to an award dinner on June 11th. So by the time this broadcasts, I'll let Missing Witches know what award I won.
Toot!
Yeah, it's amazing. I know I was entered into the contest, and then all of a sudden, my publicist says, you know, well, what do you want for the award dinner, Fish or Chicken, it's Normal Suspects. And I'm just like, what award dinner? And I quickly Googled and I was like, oh my God, I'm a finalist. And I'm just like, oh, so that one is a really good one. That one's under shamanism and paganism. It's something that I also will be hosting classes around. And each week we go through a different chapter of that book. One week it's about connecting with animals. The next week it's connecting with plants. The next week it's about connecting with, you know, the landscapes. And it's just a really beautiful workbook, actually, that helps you to reconnect or connect even in a deeper way. I know a lot of witches who are deeply connected with Mother Earth, but still got a different spin out of this book, just because the earth will continue to unfold itself to you. You know, the more and more you pay attention, this dialogue with Mother Nature and Mother Earth is just like ongoing. It's absolutely beautiful. But to get back to the point, that one was kind of like what I do and how I see the world and how I practice. This book, Belief, Being, and Beyond, is my life. This one made me dig deep. I usually don't share anecdotal stories about my personal life unless it is helpful for a person to understand that I get it. I understand. I've been through, you know, the Shiza too, and, you know, came out on the other side, and, you know, Shiza washes off, you know. But this one is, it's really like my editor was like, we want more stories. We want more stories. We want more stories. So when you read this book, I really wrote it as though for the reader. And so when you're sitting in your little book nook or on your comfy couch with your comfy blanket and your comfy tea, know that I wrote it for you and for that dialogue, and let it speak to you the way that it speaks to you. I don't know if you have any specific questions and where you want to go, Amy, with this, but that kind of is the overview. And this one is another workbook. When you buy it, I highly recommend you buy a journal with it as well, because at the end of each chapter, I have journal prompts so that you can do your deep dig into your authenticity. And this book really is about, you know, asking questions, approaching life with curiosity, because you can have all the answers right there in front of you. But if you do not pose a question, or if somewhere along the line, someone or something or some concept shut you down from asking a question, maybe even being a witch or being a female or being a they, them, or being a, you know, a male or being a person of color and blah, blah, blah. The list goes on. Anything that's in the category, quote unquote, the other, we have all been there. Even if it's like you were too smart, you were too silly, you were too much, anything, all of that. If something shut you down and it limited you and your curiosity, this book is for you. This book is written for you to empower you, encourage you, inspire you to begin to open up and start posing questions to the world, to yourself, to the divine, so that you can find your authenticity.
Yes. I love that you included more of your own personal storytelling. It happens in Wisdom of Natural Earth. You talk about, you know, anecdotes from your own life and your own garden and so on. But I know you're also an academic.
Yes.
And so I think that that's like the sweet spot that we need to get to. You know, a lot of the academy is like more quantitative than qualitative, shall we say? And these are terms that you also use in the latest book. And I think we need to get to that place again of like an integration where we can write academically and from a place of research and peer review, but also include our own stories, because they're valid and they become history when we write them down.
Yes.
They become someone else's research, right? Yeah, go on.
Yes, I absolutely agree. So, you know, my doctorate is in organizational development and leadership. And in that you learn to write like henceforth according to, you know, in the words of, and you write very academically. And throughout me writing these books, I've learned my own personal voice with it, which is more almost conversational or storytelling. And so when you do get into this book, you will be like, whoa, this is a huge interweaving of a bunch of concepts. But at the end of the day, it's very simple, yet very complex. And so it's easy to read because it's not dry, but it does come with a lot of information. For example, I was born in Gallup, New Mexico, on the Navajo Reservation in the 70s, actually 1970. So I'm a Gen X. My father is full-blood Navajo. English is his second language. He is 90 years old. And if you do the math, that lands us at the time in history where he was one of those children that was taken from his hogan and put into a boarding school, residential school in New Mexico, United States. And his hair was cut. He was denied his language, et cetera. And he was taught that the Christian belief system and thought process was the superior and the only. He was taught that the white skin adult was superior and dominant to his darkness. And he carried those at a very young age. We're looking at 8 or 9 years old. He carried those lessons and went to a seminary school. And because he wanted to bring back this beauty that he felt that he found of the white body and the Christian thinking, and this is superior, I need to bring this to my people. And so that's where he met my mother, a white body, full blood Dutch lady. English and thinking is her first language. And they had several of us children, and they went back to the reservation, the Navajo reservation, which is on the Four Corners. I'm the youngest child, and they saw within me the spirit of moving spiritual leadership that runs through my father's bloodline. And so they raised me to be a spirit-filled, if that makes sense to anybody, a spirit-filled Christian individual, which means, yes, the 9 gifts of the Spirit, speaking in tongues, laying hands on, gifts, words of knowledge, prophecy, all of these things. But it was taught to me under a Christianized, you know, belief system. And I was told, do not question authority. Do not question the Bible. Do not question God, because that's just the devil's coming into your soul. And I know that sounds dramatic, but when I started questioning, they literally had prayer meetings to get the devil out of my soul. That is a very harsh, deep reality. To this day, they don't know that I'm an author. They don't follow Granddaughter Crow. And I don't blame them, because that the foundation that they built their marriage on, my father's life on, is Christian. And if you were to question that and shake that foundation, what then would there be? It's very difficult. It's a comfortable place to be in a closed mind, but you don't really grow there very well, you know? So those are some of the things. And so then I went, they did kick me out of the house, disown me. That's where this book started coming alive, because I was like, a parent's belief system can be deeper than their connection with their own child, who was their golden child. And then I think back to Abraham and Isaac and how he almost sacrificed his son unless God told him not to. And then I think about how many wars happen because of people's belief systems, and how many people in different communities are blocked out even from their parents, because their parents do not see their authenticity. So I wrote this book because I'm showing you my authenticity, and I want you to rise up and be yours.
Listeners, you can't see my full body nodding. My head is going up and down at an arc of about 3 feet.
Whiplash.
I'm going to get whiplash from nodding today for sure. Because, I mean, it's tempting to ask, you know, why you would write a book investigating not just beliefs, but like the notion of believing, in yes. addition to belief systems. But I think, I mean, you pretty much answered that question right there.
Yes. And moreover to that, when I talk about belief, I'm not talking necessarily only about religious belief. I'm talking about if you believe that you will have good teeth, if you brush them twice a day, you will religiously brush your teeth. So it's about all of your belief systems. And so I'd like to bounce off of that and tell you where the title came from. So because of the difficulties that I had in my childhood, I was about 15 when I started questioning, and they thought it was the secular world and the public school that I was in that caused me to do that. So quickly they grabbed me up and put me back into a Christian school that I went from kindergarten through sixth grade or fifth grade in Christian school. And I found myself back there and I'm just like, oh my God, this is just so weird. And so anyway, I didn't do well in high school. Let's just say I was distracted, but I got the notion that, like, I was, you know, I had to raise an F to a D in history in order to graduate. And I didn't know until I actually got my diploma that I did it. You know, it was like one of those hard times. So when I was 30 years old, you know, I thought to myself, I want to go to college. It was just like, it never really, I was like, I want to go to college. So I enrolled in adult learning, and the first night, first class, Gen 101, teacher decides to do an icebreaker, says, okay, everybody, if you were to write a book, what would the title be so that we could get to know each other better? So we all take 10, 15 minutes, think about the title, and we write it down. And then they started going around the room. And like one guy says, how to ski. And so now we all know that he knows how to ski. And if we want to know, talk about skiing with him, he'll share. And the next lady said, you know, how to bake the best oatmeal cookies. And it's like, okay, maybe we could get her to bring us cookies. But as they were going around, I was like, oh, Shiza, I did it wrong. I went too deep again. I didn't do the assignment correctly. I can change my answer. I can think of a quick answer, like how to walk a dog or how to roller skate or something. But I just decided in that moment to stick with my original thing. And the teacher got to me and said, well, what would your book be called? And I said, Belief, Being, and Beyond. And she said, everybody, it was awkwardly quiet in that classroom. And they're like, what? And I said, the way that one believes constitutes their behavior, their beingness in the world. But there is something beyond that. And if we all recognize that there is always more, then maybe we can, you know, be more community. And so this book, and now I'm in my early 50s, this book has been within me. I'm thankful to my publicist, Llewellyn Worldwide, for keeping the original title because it is true to me. They added that subtitle about healing from harmful belief systems. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, I wrote a book about what? Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I actually have a highlight of that passage that you're talking about. The way it appears in the book is, whatever a person believes, even if it is the simplest belief, constitutes how they behave in the world. I would love for you to unpack that even more, because I think it's something that we don't either think about or talk about amidst identity politics and everything that's happening in the world, how much what we believe constitutes our reality. And as you point out, our behavior. Can you dig into yes. that a little bit more for us?
Sure. So we don't look at our belief systems, but I have been looking at belief systems since I was a little girl and got shunned because I didn't adopt their belief system and I questioned it. And so I look at people's belief systems and I realize that it constitutes completely everything in their whole entire world. If you believe that you are ugly, you are going to live an ugly life. If you believe that you are smart, you're going to live an intelligent life. If you believe that you're worthy, you're going to take what's yours, and it's right in front of you. Nobody else is going to take it. It's yours. You're worthy. Claim it. But if somewhere along the line, a system or a concept through your lived experience comes in and says, you're not worthy. It's everybody else's turn but yours. You need to be a good person, and this is how you do it. It starts limiting, and then we find ourselves, you know, going to psychologists and it's crazy, but it's like the easiest belief system. If I believe that waking up at 6 a.m. and drinking a cup of coffee is going to set my day straight, by God, I'm going to wake up at 6 a.m. and drink a cup of coffee. Now, the same, if I think that, oh, well, if I wait until 8, then my day is going to be better, then I'm going to wait till 8. But it's about the belief that we have around the phenomenon. So what I mean by that is we live in a phenomenon. Each situation is a phenomenological exchange, whether it's you driving down the street, saying a prayer in the forest, cooking a blessed meal. It's a phenomenon that you are experiencing. Now, our brains put meaning attached to those phenomenons. And those meanings that we attach are based on our basic belief system. Like if I was told time and time again that I make a killer lasagna, when I'm making lasagna, I'm like, yeah, this is going to be really good. And I'm going to make it with that love and that excitement. And it, by that alone, because of the way that I'm thinking about it, will become a killer lasagna, metaphorically, not like I don't poison my food, not intentionally, but yeah, it is. It's, and to look at our belief systems and recognize that, am I doing this behavior because of something I believe? And what is it that I believe that's causing me to do this behavior? And I'm not judging anything. I'm not saying one way's right or one way's wrong. I'm just saying there's reason. And if you write your own story in your own life, in your own internal narrative, that's when you begin to shed the beliefs that other people forced upon you. And you get to examine and question for yourself. And that's when your authenticity rises.
You talked about when your belief system changed, or when what you believed changed, that you got shunned. That was your word, shunned. Yeah. We have a lot of Coven Mates listeners who still exist in what we sort of cutely call the broom closet.
Yes.
So, you know, you said your family doesn't know this other part of your life. I think a lot of our listeners can relate to that.
Yes.
How do you navigate that, and what advice do you have for our Coven Mates who are listening, who are also trying to navigate that, you know what I'm asking?
Yeah. I am not ever going to force anybody out of any kind of a closet. You know, if you're having fun and you can meditate in that closet, good for you. I would say that this is what I would say. Oh, because it goes in so many different directions. We exist within a dynamic world, and sometimes we need to make concessions in order to keep the balance of that dynamic world, whether it's because you're raising children, or because you can't afford to live on your own, or because you know that you will be shunned like Granddaughter Crow has been shunned, and that's not something that is in your bloodline to do at this point, or whatever. So I get it. But this is what I would say. If you draw a circle around yourself, and name that circle my capacity, and understand that your capacity has to do with two different things. One, the internal world, you, and two, the environmental world, the external world, and how you make agreements with each one of those. When you go up to the threshold of your circle, of your capacity, and you start challenging it, There are what I call watchers at the threshold, and they will push you back and they will tell you things like, who do you think that you are? You shouldn't be growing past this capacity. You're not allowed. Where are you going to be otherwise? And if you fight through those and you find yourself outside of that threshold, for the first moments, like, you feel like you're in no man's land and you feel a little lost. But then when you start creating something in that no man's land, you then stretch your capacity. I will not ask you to stretch your capacity and upset your world, but I will say, if you are making these concessions, then recognize why. Is it for your children? Is it for peace? Is it for something that's bigger inside of you? And if so, keep that. But if you're doing it and you realize, well, I'm doing this because they told me to, and it's like nothing, it's like, well, then maybe you can test your capacity. And trust me, this book tested my capacity, because putting out my story in all of its complexity and as an empath, some of the stuff I didn't want to write because I didn't want to trigger anybody, you know, me being on my deathbed and the miscarriages and all of that, you know, it's like, I didn't want to trigger anybody, but it's like it needed to come out for whatever reason. And so I got pushed past my capacity, now knowing that I could be walking down the street and somebody's like, oh yeah, do you know that she had ACL surgery and was septic and was on her deathbed? And I'd be like, how do you know that about me? You know, my own parents don't even know that about me, you know, that kind of a thing. So I would say, be where you are, but understand why you're making those choices and make sure that that is in alignment with your authenticity.
Can you talk a little bit about the various bodies
Sure.
that you cover, the types of bodies? I like the reframing of this notion of body. Like, obviously we have our physical bodies, our organs, our hands, our heads, but also like a, excuse me, like a body of water. Like how we use the term a body of water.
Oh, wow.
That there are integrations and separations and ways of looking at things. Can you talk about the bodies that you cover?
Sure. So I'll start basic and say that there is a school of thought that says that we have four bodies of existence, that we have the physical body, the emotional body, the mental body, and the spiritual body. And this notion of calling them bodies instead of just saying, I am a spirit living in this lived experience as a human being, and I have a mind and I have emotions. That's a different concept. It's kind of similar, but it's a little bit different. When you look at them as bodies of existence, then what you're looking at is every body, every one of your bodies and everybody needs to rest. We need to grow. We need to have healing. We need to have exercise. My physical body needs that. My emotional body needs exercise and food and, you know, rest. My mental body needs exercise and food and rest. My spiritual body needs exercise, food, and rest. And so there it is. So when we're looking at all of these, and sometimes your bodies will argue with each other inside of you. And that's when we find conflict. And that's when we feel like we're lost. My brain will say, you have to do this and you have to go to work in this place in order to make X number of dollars in order to support the life that you want to live. And then my heart's like, but I hate that job because there's a mean person there. I don't want to go. And then you force your body to go. And, you know, there's all of that kind of stuff. But also, you know, when we recognize these things, and I say, give each of your bodies a voice, and it's okay if they argue. That's the human experience, you know. I don't think my cat's bodies argue with each other. She says, I'm tired, I'm gonna lay down, I don't give a shit what you think, you know. So she just, her spirit goes to sleep, her emotions go to sleep, her mind is like, whatever, get away, you know. But we as the humans tend to have this complexity. When you brought up the body of the ocean, I kind of also went into the place of Mother Earth is macrocosm. We are a microcosm of Mother Earth herself, meaning that 65 to 70 approximately percent of the human body is water. Oh gosh, 65 to 70% of Mother Earth is water. You know, Mother Earth has, she has grass and wheat growing, and we have these little hair follicles, and you know, there's a lot of beauty. She has we have lungs, and she has trees, both needing oxygen or producing oxygen for our lungs, and we produce carbon dioxide for her lungs. I mean, there's just this connection, you know, there's a connection. So that's what I would say. Four bodies.
And how, I mean, you, at our Beltane event, you did a very good job of this, but for our listeners who maybe missed it, how can we use our bodies and our spirits and our emotions and our minds to connect or to remember that connection to our natural world?
Sure. So there are many, many ways. I am going to think of one. And I'm going to invite each listener, unless you're driving, if you're in a safe place where you can actually put your hands together, the tips of your fingers together, I'm going to invite you to do so. And if you are driving or cooking food or whatever, remember to do this later. It takes less than 30 seconds. Put the tips of your fingers together. Inhale through your nose for a few counts. Hold that breath within you for a few counts and blow it through your mouth as much as you can, followed by another inhale through your nose. Hold, exhale. We'll do one more. So now we're in a different space consciously. And then the next time you're in the natural world, you sit down under a tree or on a bench or on the grass or on a rock. Do that for a few moments and then look around you and recognize that the world around you recognizes that you are there with it too. When you touch a tree, it senses your touch, maybe through heat. Maybe it has a sixth sense or an 18th sense that we're not even aware of. And it knows that you're there. When you see a hawk, know that that hawk probably saw you first. And the fact that it's letting you see it is a compliment to you and the connection with you. And then feel into it emotionally. How do you feel in this space? And maybe even journal about that. And then go into your mental body. What does this bring up within you? First, you kind of write, there's a tree, there's a hawk, I see a hummingbird. And then you kind of freeform and free flow and go, oh, the hummingbird reminded me when I was a little girl, and all of a sudden this beauty comes up and you start connecting. And then spiritually feel that you are in a spiritual realm. I mean, the natural world takes us into an open space spiritually. I know I live in kind of a suburb right off of a pretty big city. And so when I drive up to the mountains here in Colorado, you know, we're already a mile high. And when you go up, and that's just here in Denver area, when you go up the mountains and, you know, you can actually go above the clouds. When you go up there, all of a sudden it's like almost like this little tent circle that your spirit is in just goes, it opens up and you're like, oh my goodness, my spirit can feel for miles and miles and I feel safe and secure. So feel free at any time that you want to relax, rewire your nervous system a little bit, deeper connect with yourself or your community or the natural world. Remember, put your fingers tips together and do that deep breathing. There is a very scientific reason. Basically, we are in beta state. And when you take a few breaths like that, you go into alpha state, which is more relaxed. And it feels slower, but you're actually more aware.
Yes, I always have to remind myself that rushing makes things take longer because I have to do it twice. I have to go back and fix my, I have to clean up what I dropped because I was rushing. So I don't remember what branch of the military it is, but one of them, their slogan is like slow is smooth and smooth is fast.
Oh, nice.
So I kind of like to think about that in nature too, like slow is smooth and smooth is fast. There are cycles happening beyond our human lifetimes that we could never possibly imagine, you know, yes. Seeing them come full circle.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about Eagle Heart Foundation and Eagle Heart Academy? I know you brought it up a little bit when we were talking about the wisdom of the natural world. Can you talk about this project?
Yeah, it's in its beta testing. So the Eagle Heart Foundation is a nonprofit organization that really, it lifts the voice of the quote unquote other, just like I was talking about earlier, you know, even a tall, white-bodied male can experience being an other at one point in their life. And so we all experience this. And so with the Eagle Heart Foundation, we lift the voice of the collective soul and celebrate all of that and learn cross-culturally, how do we communicate and how do we collect ourselves respectively and with respect. The Eagle Heart Academy. So we've been through a beta test where I actually roll out every week one of the academies, one of the chapters of Wisdom of the Natural World, and we live and we grow. And so I'm not sure where exactly we're going with this. However, I can guarantee that if it catches on with Eagle Heart, so be it. But if it doesn't, look to GDC. I'll be doing the Academy, because, you know, and I will be rolling that out as well. So keep your eye out, www.granddaughtercrow.com. And it really is the people who went through the beta tests. I had them fill out anonymously feedback so that I can understand how to gain and grow without them feeling, you know, like, oh gosh, you know, she's Granddaughter Crow and I don't want her to think I thought it was bad or sucked or something like that. I need to know the truth, right? And so there was one that said, I am a witch. I have been a witch my whole life. I felt very, very connected to the natural world, but going through this movement that you're doing, because it comes with like an initial 45 minute class, and then it gives you an exercise to do sometime during that week. And then you have to write and respond about that exercise. And then the community starts building itself. And it's a beautiful, beautiful movement. But being able to do those exercises and then come back and report them to a group and bounce it off grows and expands your own. I didn't realize I was the only one that did that. I didn't realize I wasn't the only one. You know, it expands your community and everything. So, and I'm thinking, I mean, it doesn't take a psychic to see that if I did that with Wisdom of the Natural World, what's stopping me from doing that with Belief, Being, and Beyond? Walking through this book with people and seeing their feedback and how it impacts them and getting their questions and their curiosity and stirring that questioning box up within you. And then all of a sudden, like I say, all the questions could be right in front of you, but if you don't formulate, all the answers can be right in front of you, but if you don't formulate the question, you may not recognize the answer.
Yeah. And I think we exist inside the game show Jeopardy, where oftentimes the answers take the form of a question.
I agree. Very well said. Very well said.
And I mean, back to Belief, Being, and Beyond. I mean, it's question after question, and there are a lot of answers in there, but really, I think even at some point in the book, you make the statement that this is one large question.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because questions lead to answers. When you get an answer, that leads to hopefully action. And when you do this action based on this answer, that leads to manifestation. So question, answer, action, manifestation. And that is easy, like working with the elements, earth, air, fire, water. It's like working with the directions, you know, the earth. Well, I guess it's like the air is the east, and it brings in the question and the idea. And then you move to the south, which is fire, which brings in the action based upon that idea. Then you move it into the west, which is based on emotion in my thought process. And then you put your emotions around this idea and the action that you're taking, and you redefine it. And then all of a sudden you go to the north, which is the earth, which is manifestation. So that's how we roll. That's how we roll, people.
Yeah. And I mean, again, let's kind of cycle back and say, like, even if we just take a moment to recognize how much what we believe, whether it's our political beliefs, our religious beliefs, our personal beliefs, our beliefs about what other people think of us or don't think of us, our imagined ideas, our narratives that we create, all of those beliefs, just take a moment to investigate, recognize how much those belief systems are impacting your behavior, the action part that we're looking toward, you know, because we can't live in the philosophical, you know, as much as I might want to here in my little bubble in the woods. We can't live inside the theoretical. We need to feel things and do things and, you know, get beyond belief. Yes.
Absolutely.
And into being, you know.
Yes. Can I say a cuss word?
You can say all the, try to shock me. Oh, okay. Inventive cuss words.
to empower the witches, you know, I just want to say that the action and the thought and the action and the, you know, behavior and all of that, the earth, air, fire, water, all of that we're talking about and being aware and conscious about how that's working within you, then you're not just practicing magic, my dear, you're throwing that shit down.
Don't just practice magic. Throw that shit down. I want it on a t-shirt. When you start making merch, GDC, I want it on a t-shirt.
And okay, in fact, you got it.
I'm excited. When can we expect some GDC merch? I want a t-shirt. I want a silk screen of your face in your signature hat with a slogan that says something like, don't just practice magic. Throw that shit down.
I love it. You know, it's I always listen to the questions that I'm asked and I take them as signals from the divine. So apparently I'm going to be doing merchandise soon. I can tell you that my book, like I mentioned, is up for an award. I'm going to be doing a lot of not belief being and beyond. That will probably enter next year and we'll see what happens as I throw that shit down. Right. Mm-hmm. And, but I'm going to be doing a lot of, you know, touring around podcast wise and stuff. I am going to be up in Washington, D.C. to the American Library Association, which is apparently the largest international or maybe just national library event in the world annually. So I'm going to be there signing, you know, Belief Being and Beyond. So I don't know where this wave, I am surfing, but this wave, I don't know what beach I'm going to be landing on. If my books are going to be in libraries across the United States, what? I don't know, you know, we'll see. But all I know is that I know it's going somewhere great beyond what I could ever anticipate. Ooh, that's a good one. Hey, that. I know I'm going someplace great beyond what I can anticipate. I know I'm going someplace great beyond what we can all anticipate. Say that three times. Click your heels. Hells yeah.
Yeah. Lolly Moon puts it this way. I'm paraphrasing, but the only possibilities that we're aware of are the ones that exist in our minds. There is an infinite universe of possibilities out there that we just haven't even thought to imagine yet. And this is the universe of possibility that I expect for you, granddaughter Crow. I know
thank you for that blessing.
You feel compelled to create and to communicate, and I know that that's not going to stop anytime soon.
Right.
Before I ask you to close, do any of our coven mates who are here have a question for granddaughter Crow that you want to ask? I think we covered everything. Okay. That just big smiles and blessings. So before you close the circle for us, can you tell us the names of all your books and where our listeners can find you?
Yes. Just remember granddaughter Crow, not grandmother Crow. Although I am actually a grandmother, I have 4 beautiful grandchildren. Remember granddaughter Crow and www.granddaughtercrow.com. That's all you have to remember. If you want to, I have a page there of all of my books. Missing Witches, you are correct. I am trying not to let my next book come out, but it's kind of trickling out, and even in this about internal narratives and how we look at those. And so, you know, I'm not sure when that will hit. I'll probably start writing it in the fall. And so, yeah, you know, it's going to be absolutely excellent. You can always follow me on social media. All of that information is on my website as well. Also, you know, as I grow and develop and go past my thresholds and the watchers at the gate, like who the hell do I think I am, and go into this no man's land and create. I've done it so many times. I'm like, oh, great, here we are in no man's land. But then again, I have a Raven Crow totem. So I'll fly into the darkness and I'll be like, oh, I'm going to make this and I'm going to make this and I'm going to make people smile. But feel free to reach out to me if you have a question. I think my email is right on the website, and, you know, drjoy@granddaughtercrow.com. If you have a question or comment or anything, you know, feel free to reach out to me. I'm here for you.
And you're definitely here for us. Thank you again for being one of the very few members of the Four Timers Club. We're always so excited to have you back and to be in circle with you. Thank you so much. Your new book is
Belief, Being, and Beyond. And it's your journey to questioning ideas, to deconstructing concepts, and to heal from harmful belief systems.
I mean, and with
that, yeah, I know. It's deep, but it's an easy, it flows. I've heard a lot of feedback like, wow. But I will tell you one thing before I close. If you pick up this book, and if you want to see the pattern of how this all flows so that you get the big picture, go to the appendix B where it says overall matrix, and it will show you this matrix of how I'm rolling it out and how each chapter rolls out and how I interweave basically like the chapter on awakening, mourning. And then I also talk about the East, and I talk about the spring, and I talk about your childhood, and I talk about, you know, the creation story within religions and major religious things, as well as the Navajo Nation. I do that. And then I talk about the tarot cards in there. And then I give all of this information, even science. And then I go into the next one and I do the same pattern with enlightening. And there you're looking at noon, and you're looking at your adolescence, and you're looking to the summer. And so there's a pattern that you'll catch as you roll through the book. But if you want to see it, I mean, it's just like, I remember when I was in math class, the once you found out that the answers were in the back of the book, it made homework a lot easier. So use the back of the book. So with that, I just want to give you all, a big hug from the natural world, and know that you are not alone. You are seen. Your authenticity is seen. Even if you feel like you're not seen by the communities or certain communities or certain family members or work members or any of that, that tree sees you, that hawk sees you, and I see you. So with that, I want to close the sacred space, let my ego bounce back in and tell me, what the hell did you just talk about? And I have to go through my ego snapback. But blessings, 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 blessed be to all.
Blessed fucking be. Thank you so much. GDC, Granddaughter Crow, Dr. Troy Gray, all of your incarnations, and to our coven who are here today, and to those of you who are listening, bless a fucking bee.
Bless a fucking bee. I love it.
You must be a witch.
Just a reminder that the Missing Witches podcast is entirely listener funded. If you love the project and want to support us and join in on conversations like this one live, find us on Patreon at patreon.com/missingwitches.